Welcome back. It is June 6th, Season 2, Episode 49, Let Me Be Frank Podcast. Brian, and we're changing it up. John is here, in person.
Back in action, Brian. It's been a long time coming, but it's great to be back on the podcast with you and talking sports, just as ever.
Absolutely. So let's open with the NBA. The Golden State Warriors up 2-0, NBA Finals. Game 1, the game that everyone was talking about with the J.R. Smith fiasco at the end of the game. George Hill misses the free throw, tie game, J.R. dribbles out the clock, LeBron freaks out, has a meltdown on the bench, and the Cavs go on to lose by 10, I want to say. And then game 2 was all Cavs. Steph was dominant. Kevin Durant was 10 of 14 from the field, I believe. JaVale and Sean Livingston did not miss and were difference makers in the starting lineup and off the bench, respectively. It doesn't look good for the Cavs. It really doesn't.
You know, Brian, as much as I want to buy that storyline, we've seen this before. True. Right?
True.
Now, to be fair, Kevin Durant is on this team.
Yes.
Kevin Durant was not on the Warriors when they were the first team, or the first notorious team to blow a 3-1 lead.
Right.
But you're right. The offense is clicking on all cylinders right now. Klay Thompson looked unstoppable even with a high ankle sprain in game 2. This offense is just clicking. You know, they find a way to keep guys involved. You got role players like JaVale McGee and Sean Livingston, as you said, making contributions. Bulls' second-round draft pick and cash considerations equivalent, Jordan Bell, is getting significant minutes and playing well for the Warriors as well.
Fair trade. It was a fair trade.
All our deals are fair. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, it's tough to say it, but the Warriors right now are looking like they're going to complete this series and become, as you know, they have been the last 3 years, one of the greatest dynasties that we've seen in the NBA in recent history. I will not put them yet in Bulls territory, but they're certainly getting there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care too much for all of that, but it's the interesting thing was that elongated, or I guess the uncut video during the timeout that we all went to commercial, when just seeing LeBron and his teammates react on the bench, it was as if they had lost the championship already. They were going to overtime. Like, just because JR got the rebound doesn't mean he's going to make the shot. If he misses that shot, what is the difference? There's no difference in the actual outcome of the game or the happening of the game. They're still going to overtime. The fact that everyone was just so down and depressed is, I would say, coaching. A lot of people want to throw the blame on LeBron, and I love doing that because, frankly, I just don't think he's a good leader. But Ty Lue has to be in there clapping his guys up, getting them going, saying, look, we haven't played well as a team, but here we are in overtime against the best team in the league, second best team, because you want to call yourselves the best team. We're here against the second best team in the finals on the road with a chance to steal a game. Let's make something happen in these 5 minutes.
Well, and Brian, you hit on a key point there. What's the dynamic with Ty Lue, right? We all know that LeBron is essentially a quasi-player coach, but you live by that sword and you die by that sword. You see that in this instance. Normally, very composed LeBron would be the guy clapping his hands, getting the guys amped up on the bench, ready to lead them.
But would he? I don't even know if he's that guy.
I think his track record at this point has proven him to be a leader in those kind of situations, especially when he's carried them all season. He's carried the offense. He's carried, you know, through the post Kyrie Irving, bad Kevin Love period.
All his fault, in theory, by the way.
So I'm not blaming him for not being that guy, but I am saying that from an organizational perspective,
right,
when you live with LeBron as your player coach and you take away the authority from Ty Lue, you know, to Lue's credit, he doesn't have, you know, the experience or the first instinct to jump in there and assert himself, even though he should. That's his role as a head coach. The problem is we have this,
he defers to LeBron way too much, which is funny. I mean, it makes sense because that's just how it's going to work, but it's very funny that you got a coach that looks to a player in order to make things happen with his own team.
But you brought up a very good point as well about the mentality of the Cavs. I mean, in their minds, from how they reacted to JR's miscalf, it looked like that was the end of their game, right? As if they had only thought that they could win it.
It felt like a game seven loss. Like the missed opportunity.
And if you look at it, they're going into overtime in a game at Golden State, where they could have stolen one and easily changed the dynamic of the series, that's when they should have been most amped up, go out there and steal it, right? Yeah. And so from the perspective of taking themselves mentally out of the series, I think you touched on it perfectly, that will be the game changer, at least for how, you know, the first four games play out. I still think Cleveland will win at least one at home. They're dynamic at home. The crowd will get them amped up. LeBron will come out, have a historic game.
I've been burned too often this playoffs on saying LeBron's dead when he goes back home and then lights it up and we're screwed.
Right. There's fandom and love of Michael Jordan, but then there's also common sense. We've seen LeBron play, and he's going to bring his A game, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is, to win a whole series... 51 in
game one. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that, and I know Pete would be upset with me if I didn't mention that. Especially because I had said LeBron needs to drop 50 points in a game.
And he did. He went out and did it, but he didn't do it at the right time. So, yeah, this series, I'll give it five games. I'll give Cleveland one.
Gentlemen sweep.
That's right. That's right.
Win it back in Golden State. Kevin Durant's been really good. He is pretty much unguardable because people forget he's 7 feet tall, and then he'll just take fadeaway jumpers all night and hit it from 15 feet.
Right. He presents such a size but finesse matchup, as you mentioned, that Cleveland at this point, unless they put LeBron on him, just doesn't have really the matchup they need there to at least limit Durant's offensive production.
Even if you limit him, you've got three other guys that are beyond deadly. That's the team.
Right. This is what makes the Warriors, right? Yeah. The depth, the incredible, you know, shooting from the outside. Anyone can get hot. Sean Livingston, you know, we've seen guys contribute all season long, really for the last 3 or 4 years. So this is nothing new here.
With no Andre Iguodala.
Either. Right. Right. They're without Iggy. So add him in the mix maybe later in the series, and it's looking dire for, you know, the mistake by the lake.
It is. Game three will be played as you're listening tonight. That's Wednesday night. Moving on to the NHL, Washington, game away from the ever-elusive Stanley Cup. Lead Vegas 3-1. Absolutely pumped them. Monday night, 6-2. And it's the first time all playoffs where we've legitimately seen Vegas just get outplayed.
Well, and what's interesting about game four was that actually if you ask a lot of the Knights players, they may say that that was actually one of the better games they've played, not only in the series, but in the playoffs. They hit the pipe 7 times. James Neal missed a wide open shot off the post. They had opportunities to score and just didn't do it in the first period. Caps then come out, score 3 in the first, and that sort of, you know, puts the damage gets done, right?
Yes.
And so despite two close ones in games 1 and 2, 3 and 4 have been a little bit more, you know, as you've said, we've seen the Golden Knights. I keep wanting to say Golden State because they've been so dynamic throughout the season. But we've seen the Golden Knights just get outplayed for the first time. But I do think that they will come back in Game 5. I think they've got it at home. I think this team has worked too hard for too long this season, put up too many points, had too many dynamic moments to not rise to the occasion at home. I think they steal Game 5.
And they're gonna have some crazy pregame show. Probably like an hour, maybe an hour and a half. Really just let the guys sit in there and think about it. It's just gonna be a long, outrageous looking show that they put on at the pregame ceremony, and then the ice will be shitty as hell, but they'll find a way to win.
I'm hoping for holograms. I think that's the best of both worlds.
That would be.
The ice doesn't melt. You give the fans what they want. It's Vegas. You bring the entertainment factor. Holograms. Give me Tupac. Give me Biggie.
Just a full concert.
Paul Walker, Whitney. I want everyone out there.
Yes.
Charlie Puth, RIP.
We'd be missing out if we didn't say Yevgeny Kuznetsov has had an unbelievable series. I mean, pretty much everyone on Washington has, but specifically the big names. Kuznetsov is one of those guys who's been up and down. He's never been consistent enough to be a star player. This could be his breakout here in the playoffs. But he has been really good. TJ Oshie's been great. Ovechkin has been a two-way forward that we knew he could be his entire career, and he's finally showing it. And Holtby, after a shaky game one, has been really good two, three, and four.
He's been phenomenal through the rest of the series. As a testament to Kuznetsov, you know, when you think of the Capitals getting this signature series win, you immediately would think of Ovechkin getting, you know, the Conn Smythe, right? But the way Kuznetsov has played, he's really played himself into contention, if not leadership, for that award. And
a goal
so,
and six assists in the Cup Final. That's just these four games.
Right. So, you know, it's a testament to the way that Washington's clicking right now. The fan base has long awaited it.
Caps fans have longed to hear it.
That's right. But I will say, I think this is the best case scenario for the NHL. You have a team like Vegas come in, have a phenomenal season. The best season ever for an expansion team. You have a
and
long...
And they don't win.
Right. But that's good. Yes. Because you don't want people to say that the expansion process was too generous.
I mean, it was. And that's it what was. People should say. But I agree that...
But this limits those criticisms.
It makes them competitive, yeah.
It also energizes a very passionate fan base in Washington that, as you mentioned, has waited a long time for this moment.
Right.
If the Caps can pull it off.
Right.
So I think from a NHL, you know, league-wide reputation perspective, I think this is the best-case scenario for how it plays out for the league.
I agree. I felt that the Vegas run for a while was a bad look for the NHL. I still think it is, but it's good because it grows the game in an area that they've been looking to grow. Like, grow the game. However you have to do it, just grow, you know?
Right.
And even if it's a tough look for a year, you have no idea what's going to happen next year. There's so much offseason still left. There's so many teams that are looking to retool and make moves and get back into contention here. I mean, Buffalo's going to get a generational defenseman in Rasmus Dahlin with the first pick in the draft. And all of a sudden, they've got two cornerstones to their franchise that are under age 23 or 4. I can't remember how old Eichel is. And they've got all this time to build around them. So it's an exciting time to be a hockey fan, especially with the talks that Seattle's on their way in as well. So it's fun. Like, it's good. You shouldn't complain. I was definitely one of those people that was, but at the same time, you gotta take a look, take a step back and realize that, is it the worst thing if Vegas is one of the destinations for hockey?
No. Now, as the entertainment capital, arguably, of the U.S., New York. But, no, it definitely helps to grow the game, especially in the Western Conference, where you've had struggles with, you know, teams like San Jose, Phoenix, where maybe attendance isn't as high. So to show that you can actually put it in a desert city and have success, I think is a huge testament and a huge boost to, you know, the NHL's popularity, growing it outside of, you know, the longtime cities, the original six, Canada, et cetera. So
right.
I think it's definitely good for the league. Maybe ideal scenario, you would have had Vegas lose in the Western Conference Finals, but, you know, it is what it is. I think from a ratings perspective, you've definitely brought in some new fans this year that you haven't had previously. So it's overall good. I think it would be tough for Gary Oldman to complain that, you know, he didn't get the ideal series that he wanted.
Yeah, the ratings have been the highest non-Chicago Stanley Cup Finals in history. So,
it's tough to argue.
It shows how good a fan base the Hawks have when they win.
That's right.
But it also shows
we have the triannual
parade. We'll move on to the Belmont Stakes, a little horse racing. We've been following it all the way through from the Kentucky Derby back in May, all the way up till this Saturday, Belmont, New York. The favorite Justify is one win away from reaching the ever elusive Triple Crown. It'd be our second in 4 years.
That's
after
correct.
Going 38 years without having a Triple Crown winner. 4-5 favorite. Does Justify get it done? I'm not asking. Let me preface this by saying I'm not asking for like an analytical breakdown. Just a gut feeling. What do you think?
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Hell yeah, he gets it done. I mean, the way we've seen sports go the last few years, right? We've seen so many historic streaks be broken. The Cubs won the World Series. You know, Leicester City, you know, wins in Europe. It's been the underdog story for a long time, right?
The Eagles,
you know, the Sal Palantonio Eagles. But now it's time for the victors to reign once again. We're going to start seeing more Triple Crowns more often.
Okay.
Quote me on this.
Okay.
You're going to see another two within the next 10 years.
Wow. Two more triple crowns by 2028.
Steroids and horse racing are become a thing. There's going to be a Mitchell report in horse racing.
Jesus.
Yeah. The jockeys, they're going to be roided up. I'm going all out here because I think horse racing is the new frontier. We bring it back from old colonial America. Horse racing is where it's
the
at.
The legalization of sports That's betting right. has caused steroid
there
issue.
There are rampant in scandals horse in horse racing.
I actually don't think Justify gets it done. The horse did not look great in the Preakness. Slow, actually, is how I would describe him. I mean, that can all change. You get excited, you race a couple horses you've already beaten. I don't really know the Bravazo's 7-1 he raced, I believe, in the Kentucky Derby. Vino Rosso, 8-1, also a Derby horse. Tenfold, I believe, raced in both, 10-1. And then Gronk has his horse, Gronkowski, at 25-1. So I really don't know. I will say, take a horse with odds if you're going to bet. I don't think Justify gets it done, though. I just think it looked too tired.
You know what? I'm almost willing to bet money that Drunk Gronk substitutes himself in for his horse and tries running against the ponies.
That would be great.
And I'll give him the first 5 yards. Because I bet he gets a
you
better
think
start
he breaks
than
off the You think he I breaks think he off does. The gate better? I don't know. I mean, that's a tough one. But that is the race Saturday. Check it out. NBCSN will have the undercard, for lack of a better term, races. And those are fun to watch because Eddie O tries to teach you and win you some money gambling.
All you young jockeys out there,
yes.
Got to keep an active whip.
Yep. Keep that whip tight.
That's right.
We'll move on to our top five with the news of Brian Colangelo coming out and our own Pat Bovard outed as a Garpax burner account. We now we'll go through and say the five athletes who we suspect would have burner accounts. So, John, I will let you go first. Who do you think?
You know, there's a surprising number of NBA players on my list in this one. It just seems like they just
petty.
Complain the most. That's
they
right.
Do.
That's right. So number five. I feel like he hadn't had many PR issues until this year, but Isaiah Thomas, right? Traded multiple times.
Okay.
Jumping all over the U.S., trying to defend himself once he got to Cleveland, then once he was out of Cleveland. I feel like he's got a couple burner accounts stashed away, you know, that are both longing for his Boston days, but also still trying to defend himself, you know, as possibly the worst trade in recent NBA history, considering that Boston absolutely robbed, just highway thievery, larceny, call it, of Cleveland by taking Kyrie. So Isaiah Thomas is my number five.
Okay.
Number four is a little bit less conventional because I don't think they actually know how to operate Twitter, but Gar Forman and John Paxson.
You're saying at Bovhan is not...
Correct. They're...
Wow.
That's
breaking
right.
news.
I'm saying he's not because there are actual spies in the organization that listen from the floor of the Brno Center, that chill in campaign's locker, because no one, you know, we all know he's not using it, and they actually report back on the team, Hoiberg, etc., to the mob bosses up above.
That would be incredible.
They have actual spies, so they have real burners. Number three... This is absolutely true, without a doubt, quote me, Aaron Rodgers.
I have Aaron Rodgers as well.
With all the backlash and talk on Twitter following the Bachelor debacle, you know he's got at least 5 to 6 fake fangirl accounts trying to bash Jordan Rodgers, looking to promote Robbie Hayes, hating JoJo, and all the while saying that Aaron Rodgers... and Danica Patrick are made for each other.
So I will butt in real quick and say that one of my criteria is guys that don't have, like, large families or wives and kids, whatever, because so often we've seen the wives or family members have the burner accounts.
That's right.
Aaron Rodgers is the perfect guy because he doesn't talk
right.
to his family.
He is his own wife.
Yep, that's it.
That's right. Aaron Rodgers, quote it here first. Has several burner accounts.
Several.
Number two, because it's easy to pick on him, and he's always finding ways to make these petty comments, but LeBron James.
Of course. I didn't put him strictly because he's got such a big entourage that he rolls with.
Right. And so like Maverick Carter could probably figure it out. Accounts.
Yeah.
I'll give that to him.
They're probably just scouring for him.
Right. Yeah. He's too busy cutting off, you know, the bottoms of his suit pants to make shorts to handle burner accounts. But you know he's directing a full barrage of a media campaign.
You've been thunderstruck.
That's right. And number one, the biggest baby in the NBA, our very own Nick Anton's MVP selection, Dwight Howard.
Oh.
Dwight Howard. I bet Dwight Howard was the father of the burner account going back to his days with the Lakers, when he would just release, you know, like subtle news about how Kobe was mean to him and
that
you know, Powell was soft and all this good stuff. Dwight Howard, I bet, is pissed right now because people have taken his idea and made it famous and he doesn't get credit for it. And so Dwight loses once again.
Dwight's burner is going to be tweeting out about how Dwight was probably the first in the game to ever have it.
Look out,
if we see those tweets, holy shit. But that, I didn't even think of Dwight Howard. Holy cow.
Right. He's forgotten down in Charlotte these days. But I guarantee Dwight Howard was the father of Twitter burner accounts.
I like that list. I'm going to go with my five real quick. Number five is Yu Darvish. Guy can't not listen to the noise. Said that he thinks all Cubs fans hate him.
Which is not wrong.
I don't think it's 100% true, but he definitely isn't well-liked. He's making a lot of money to pitch and is not doing it very well. Number four, I have Derrick Rose.
D. Rose?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
I just feel like he's one of those guys. He doesn't really fight anyone on Twitter, but he'll probably, like, every once in a while just bump himself up. Like, hey, he's been great since coming back from injury. Or, like, he did the right thing.
Now, is this a Derrick Rose or a Reggie Rose move?
That was the thing, because I feel like Reggie has to run
Reggie
all
convinced
this
stuff. Derrick to do this.
He's like, D, you need these. Trust me.
And Derrick just blindly followed him.
Number three, Boogie Cousins. The guy is so petty. I feel like he just has to have one just to go like start fights with other people.
Is Boogie the new Dwight, but more talented? I don't know. Dwight was pretty talented at one point, but I feel like he's this generation's Dwight Howard.
He
has the potential to be.
He can be if he wants to. Like, he flips it on and off so randomly. Dwight was just always the same. Boogie will go like from loving everyone to it's bipolar definition, but he goes from loving everyone to just hating everything out of nowhere. So I don't know. Speaking of bipolar, number two, Des Bryant.
Oh, wow.
He has to have a burner account. If he doesn't have multiple burner accounts, I'd be stunned. They're probably all talking shit about Jerry Jones right now, but or talking him up, his stats up, so he gets signed by someone.
Right. Someone's got to pay him.
And then I had Aaron Rodgers at number one.
That's right.
It is – if there's a checkbox that you go through to see, like, that's how you test, like, if this, then that happens, Aaron Rodgers is the
guy
that comes out with all the check marks. Those are our five. Let us know any others that we may have missed at LMBF Sports on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll move on to our stats. I'm going to go first here. I've got a couple of them.
Take it away.
The first one is the 2nd of June was National Donut Day, and there were 5 shutouts, which were the most of any day this baseball season. Giants shut out the Phillies 4-0, Braves shut out the Nats 4-0, A's shut out the Royals 16-0, Pirates shut out the Cardinals 4-0, and the Angels shut out the Rangers 6-0. So happy Donut Day, everybody. I also have Jacob deGrom stats for 2018. He has allowed 1 run or less in 8 straight starts, which is a franchise record. Opponents are 6 of 51, which is a 118 batting average with runners in scoring position. And opponents are 0 for 12 with 9 strikeouts with the bases loaded. Most remarkable of all, opponents have won 7 of the last 9 starts that he's pitched in.
Oh, he's this year's Jose Quintana for sure. He's actually, he was up there with Jose Quintana for least run support over the last few years. I mean, it's an absolute shame because DeGrom is single-handedly holding that rotation together despite all the injuries to basically the other 7 potential healthy starting pitchers.
Yeah, Matt Harvey has Cincinnati-itis, and Syndergaard is God knows where.
Mats is hurt.
They're all hurt. Yeah.
I mean, it's time for them to bring back Bartolo at this point, but it's a shame because
he's
languishing. He's languishing in
They need to trade him.
They can't do that, though. They'll lose the fan base. The
Cubs have to trade him. And then my last one is the Cubs are 12-4 when Yu Darvish is on the disabled list.
Good news. I'm bitter on Yu, to be perfectly honest, because I single-handedly blame him for losing the World Series for the Dodgers.
I just hate how good Jake Arrieta is right now, because the whole time I said, if you're going to give that money to Yu Darvish, why not just give it to Jake Arrieta? They're asking for the same thing, and Jake was asking for less years.
To be perfectly honest, I went to pay to either of them because I don't trust that Arrieta's raw. He has performed this year.
3 years, $75 million. I would have done for Jake Arrieta, without a doubt.
But his numbers the last few years, it certainly dropped off. I don't think they should have paid either. I think they should have gone out and invested either a younger talent, build up the pitching in the farm system.
I agree.
System,
I mean, if
try to find a replacement for Jay Hay.
I think it was Jake or nothing.
Some of that salary.
It should have been Jake or nothing. Take a hometown discount, stay in Chicago, we'll give you whatever. Stay away from Yu Darvish. They missed out on Ohtani, that's fine. Like, if you missed out, you gave it your best shot. Don't act like Yu Darvish was the target all along.
All right. The real issue is you now have more than $200 million tied up with Jason Hayward and Yu Darvish over the next 3 years.
Yep. It's all right, though. Bryce Harper's going to be a Cub.
Wow.
I've been saying it for so long that I can't get off the train. I see the tracks ending, and there's just a cliff, but I can't get off.
We'll have plenty of trade and free agent baseball coverage coming for you soon. Before Brian just goes off into euphoria about either Manny Machado or Bryce Harper.
Fuck Manny Machado. I'm all in on Bryce Harper.
Delusional Cubs
fans. I'm all in on Bryce Harper. I'm out on Manny Machado. I've been out forever. Never wanted Machado. Still don't. If you can get him for the price of Happ and Montgomery, then I'm in. But you can't.
I will say this right now. If the Orioles trade Manny Machado for anything but several top prospects and completely sneeze at the idea of taking Mike Montgomery, who's roughly the equivalent of sticks of butter.
He threw six innings the other day with one run allowed, all right? He's a lefty.
Don't do this to me, Brian. Don't.
He's a lefty.
I can't go off right
now. He has a World Series run.
I have high blood pressure, Brian.
What do you have for stats?
So it comes down to hockey.
All right.
And everyone likes to talk about the 3-1 lead, right? Because it's Warriors-Cavs season. You know, basically that part between May and, you know, the dead period of early July. I just call it Cavs-Warriors season.
Yeah.
So everyone likes to talk about 3-1 leads in championship series. But in hockey, the last team to blow a 3-1 lead was the 1942 Detroit Red Wings. So obviously Vegas is facing some uphill odds right now. Uphill odds against a very talented, clicking on all cylinders, Washington Capitals team. We'll see.
I like
Everyone
that.
Talks about the 3-1 lead in basketball, but 3-1 lead in hockey might be where the new story is this year.
I like it. We'll move on to our tweets. I have a pair, so I'm going to do... The first one is a J.R. Smith quote on playing with LeBron James. It's a lot of pressure, not for myself or for my teammates specifically, but just playing on his team. It's almost a gift and a curse. You play on his team, you're playing with the best player in the world, and you get to witness some great historic things and be a part of it. And then on the other side, if you don't help the person win, they're looking at you too. So it's a lot of pressure depending on how you look at it, but at the same time, but I tell him all the time, he has the opportunity to play with me as well. It's the most JR quote of all time, like recognizing that if he says anything bad, he's going to get absolutely destroyed by LeBron. And so he backtracks a little and saying like, it's a lot of pressure, but not specifically for me or any of my teammates. It's just pressure there. But, and then he realized like, all right, I covered my ass. Now it's time to be me and be like, but he also gets to play with me.
The real J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
The R is for real, by the way.
Exactly. That is it's vintage. It's good to see him surviving the onslaught that he's had. He had MVP chance early in the first quarter in game two when he got to the free throw line from the Warriors fans.
People forget that J.R.'s first name is Earl.
Yes.
Which also has all the letters you need for real. Because yes. JR keeps it 100.
Two-time former Bull.
That's right. without playing a single game for them, I believe.
I think he was on the Bulls for a combined 2 hours.
That's right.
The second one is a tweet from Smash Mouth. Just a normal night in Seattle at the Mariners game. The Mariners were playing All-Star by Smash Mouth on repeat, and it said, "Make it stop. A new song will play after 1,000 All-Star game votes have been cast at Section 138. So until the fans at the game cast 1,000 All-Star game votes, All-Star by Smash Mouth would not stop playing.
That is that the modern-day equivalent of, like, of just buying votes in the political space?
It is the modern day equivalent of vote early, vote often. That's what it is.
Or cruel and unusual punishment.
A little bit of both. But somebody once told me the world is going to roll me, John.
Winners win and shooters shoot.
That is a fact. What do you have for tweets?
So it's funny that you mentioned him as part of the burner accounts, because I actually have a tweet about Derrick Rose.
Beautiful.
From someone with the handle "not a role model."
It's Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose's last three games against the Warriors before this season, 29 points per game on 47% shooting, .. But LeBron needed help, so they went and got certified bucket getter Jordan Clarkson. Emoji blowing the nose and a picture of Derrick Rose laughing at his phone.
That's Derrick Rose. You found Derrick Rose's burner account.
I didn't want to jump
into
there at that point, but this is Derrick Rose's burner account.
We're going to have to do some deep diving. What is the account again?
At not a role model.
Not a
role. Which actually would fit Derrick's persona or legacy in Chicago perfectly.
We've done it. We found Derrick Rose's burner account.
We'll put this one up on the site so you can see it.
We will. As always, as we close the week, John, what are you looking forward to this weekend?
This weekend, I'm going to get out and play a little golf.
All right.
So I'll be out there hitting the links, trying to pretend like my golf game is anywhere near salvageable after returning to my wicked slice that has...
love it.
I thought I had corrected, but no. Winter has... That cruel mistress has brought it back.
It always does. It always does. Obviously, the Belmont is this weekend. I will be in the area on the East Coast for the first time in a while, so excited about that. As always, though, you can check us out at letmebefrankblog.com, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at LMBF Sports. Check this podcast out. Share it with your friends on iTunes, on Google Play. Leave a review, and we will see you next week. Change had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. I said, the boys are back in town. Chick that used to dance a lot, every night she'd be on the floor shaking what she'd got. Man, when I tell you she was cool, she was red hot. I mean she was steaming. And that time over at Johnny's place, well, this chick got up and she slapped Johnny's face. Man, we just fell about the place. If that chick don't wanna know, forget her. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. I said,